I love the brand, love Taste Buds Kitchen, culinary entertainment, but really individuals are putting their life savings and their hopes and dreams in our vision. And so we really want to do it responsibly and support our owners really well.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Jesse Brelsford, founder of Taste Buds Kitchen. Today, we're discussing how a D1 swimmer, Harvard grad, and former Wall Street banker left it all behind to follow her passion. How her first location in New York City has led to the opening of 25 locations nationally. Jesse's ambitious goal of opening 200 locations over the next 5 years, and how she's taken Taste Buds Kitchen to average revenues of over $700,000. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
Let's do this. We're excited to have you on today, Jesse. Food is such a controversial topic when it comes to franchising. When we start speaking to a prospective client, it's usually the first thing that comes up. So I've been thinking a lot about how we could do food in franchising without being in the hospitality business and dealing with all of that labor and the crazy hours and the slim margins, and actually be in a business where we can make money and have fun. And Taste Buds seems like a really cool, fun business. So tell us about it. We want to hear about you. Tell us about your background, how this all came about, and what Taste Buds Kitchen does.
Yeah, great question. We have a current franchisee, and that was his motto coming in. I want anything but food, right? And I laugh because now he's a Taste Buds Kitchen franchisee. But Taste Buds Kitchen, nothing like a restaurant. Like you said, margins, schedule, hours, food costs. We do culinary entertainment. So we're all about having fun in the kitchen. So our locations are about 2,000 square feet. You come in for a cooking class, a cooking birthday party, a corporate event, a date night. Our adult events are normally BYOB, so bring your own beer or wine. Kids are doing summer camps, school break camps, birthday parties. So it's a really fun business where we get to interact, use food. But the cool thing is people sign up in advance. They pay in full. See, there's very little food waste. It's not like a restaurant where you have to stock up and kind of guess on what people are going to order. We know the classes people are coming for. And then additionally, what we're selling really is entertainment. So it's the fun of the kitchen. So our food costs are very, very low. In item 19, I think it's 8%. And that is food and supplies. So that's like paper plates and napkins. We put more in there than just ingredients, anything that we churn through. The adults have everything from steakhouse to sushi to pasta, but we're really economical in how we create our menus.
That's impressive. That was one of my questions. I've not heard you talk about cost of goods. 8%, including paper.
Cliff,
that's impressive.
What were we doing in our brands?
Oh, easily 25 to 30-plus percent on just food and 1.8 to 3% on paper.
Paper goods.
Because some of the paper is that, you know, bamboo, and it's sustainable, right? And it's not your cheap styrofoam brand.
Styrofoam either. But yes, we're really economical. And because the fun is the kitchen, right? So you come in for a pasta class. The actual value of the pasta we created, you probably, you know, is not very high in terms of ingredient cost, but what you just learned and the experience, you're paying for both things, right? We don't sell food. We don't cater food. You can't come in and order something, but you can come in for a class, have a really great time. So yeah, our two biggest costs would be labor and rent, really, but food costs and cost of goods sold is very low.
Jesse, where are you going to get? Like, I'm just curious now that you just came out of the gate with a food cost number. Where are you getting? Are you doing Sysco, US Foods, or no? We go to the local grocery store and we grab what we need.
All of the above. Generally, the bigger you get, you're going to work with a big guy, Sysco, US Foods. When you're starting out, you're going to be going to Trader Joe's or Restaurant Depot or Costco or wherever you have convenient to you until you can meet the drop minimum.
We're jumping ahead on the money piece, and you have actually
right into the money.
Wait, you could tell she's a finance exec, right? Let's just get right into it. Tell us, you do have a fascinating background. I think it's very interesting, your journey and how you got here. Please explain that to the audience, how you ended up here.
Yeah, so I'm Jesse Brelsford, founder and CEO of Taste Buds Kitchen. So I started it 17 and a half years ago. I grew up in Maryland. I'm one of 23 first cousins. I love to bake. I love the kitchen. I also love numbers. I was the, you know, little girl doing the lemonade stand, selling my mom's vegetables door to door in our community. Grew up, I swam. I was a swimmer. I was a rower, but I ended up going to Harvard, major in economics, swam Division I, and got a job at Wall Street. So moved to New York City, 21 years old, had only been there once before, and that was on my way to college junior year, and just loved it. You know, really loved New York City, loved being in finance, learned a lot, but I was missing all the creative side of my brain. So missing being with kids, missing being in the kitchen. When I started Taste Buds Kitchen, I had three great grandparents alive. So I'm just used to everyone congregating in the kitchen. So I decided to start it as a hobby. Initially, it was teaching kids to bake. We were called Cupcake Kids. I did it once or twice a month on top of working crazy hours. But I liked it. Clients liked it. They wanted a lot more from me than I could do. And so about 9 months to a year later, it clicked. The recession was starting. And I said, I could do this. I could do all ages, all kinds of food. And I could do this full time. So I raised my hand. I was at Bear Stearns. JP Morgan bought us. I was supposed to be hired. I raised my hand. I said, you know, can you lay me off? I'll get severance and benefits for, I think, 6 months at the time. So I did it. So that was in 2008. Left Bear Stearns. I've been doing this full time ever since. And for the first 2 years, we rented space. So we didn't sign up. We are current lease until 2010. 2 years, we rented space for restaurants that weren't open for lunch. So I'd literally pound the pavement in New York City, walk up, knock on their door, say, you know, you're not open for lunch. Can I give you $50, $75 to use your space for a class? They happily took it. We worked with 7 restaurants, kind of Upper East Side, Upper West Side, Tribeca, all over Midtown. And then in 2010, we signed the lease. And that's really where the current version of the kitchen was born. We still have that lease. We're 109 West 27th Street in Chelsea. So we've been there 15 years. And grew the business. So that's really how the brand started my journey. Why we franchised, so that didn't happen until 5 years later. We franchised in 2015, our first location opened. So it's been just about 10 years. She actually renewed last week for another 10 years, which was exciting.
Congrats.
But we grew slowly. So when people would come to Taste Buds Kitchen, they would say, oh my gosh, I love this. This is really fun. Will you open one in Boston? Will you open one in Denver? And I, you know, was flattered. I said, I'm so glad you enjoyed it, but I don't see that for myself. And they said, well, could you teach me how to do it? So I said, I don't know. You know, let me take down your name and email. And when I kind of figured out the revenue stream and how I wanted Taste Buds Kitchen to work, I was considering how to grow, talking to my husband, you know, were we going to open more locations? And I went back to this list and there were 120 people on it that had reached out. So I said, you know, let's figure out how to franchise. All I knew was McDonald's. And so I kind of, you know, did a lot of research, how to become a boutique brand, find like-minded individuals around the country, help them, you know, business-minded, but love the food, love kitchen, love kids, help them to open it. So that's how we started. And then we were really slow and steady. So until this past year, people found us. So they would Google, you know, we had a franchise page on the website. They would find us. If we liked their market, we liked them as owners. They had the capital to do it. We would award a franchise. So we're spread out right now. Our goal was 25 by the end of 25. We were 25 by January 6th, though I feel like we made it. We were 6 days over, but we're 25 locations all across the country, California, Miami, outside of Boston, middle of the country. We're in the mid-Atlantic. I'm based in Maryland. And that's really the story of Taste Buds Kitchen.
I'm always cautious when a brand is born in Manhattan, right? It's like, okay, that is not exactly proof of concept.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily mean it will translate to Naples, Florida, or just some small town in Alabama. What are your thoughts on this is the market that we do well in? This is what we need as a sustainable market.
Yeah, it's a great question. And what I thought a lot about, and one of the reasons we franchise so slowly, so we open 1 to 2 a year. And then I think when we got to about 5, we held steady for a year just to make sure that this was going to work everywhere, right? It's a big investment. And this is a big decision for a lot of individuals. We really have pinpointed it down. We're looking for populations of over 100,000 people in 4 miles and populations with household income over 100,000 people. So you have to have enough discretionary income to be spending money on experiences for yourself, for your kids, for your company. We do great in cities. We do great in suburbs. We do great in Kansas, Missouri. You know, we're right outside of St. Louis. We have 2 in Kansas City. So we've really pinpointed where we want to be. We think we can open 400 to 500 across the country. And we have this great mapping system that we partnered with about a year ago, which they would map. They took all of our sales data for the past 12 months. They mapped who our buyer was, right? Which of the lifestyle mosaics index for Taste Buds Kitchen. And then we mapped the country through Experian data to find out where those people are. So we have the country in circles and really know where we want to be as we grow. And that really helps when franchisee candidates reach out. We're able to say like, yes, we love your market. Or, oh my gosh, I wish we could, but it's just not big enough, right? There's just not enough people to support as robust as we want it to be. And we're able to say that a lot easier now than we used to when we were having to pull up multiple sites to try to ascertain before we had the software if a location was going to be a good viable candidate.
If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere, Cliff, right? So the other side of that is if you could do this in a competitive market like Manhattan, likely will work elsewhere. But I think you were smart with the slow grow initially. Let's make sure we had proof of concept there. And then you partnered with Fran Devco, Brandon Johnson selling this thing, and it seems like you're really getting some traction. Because at some point, it's grow or die, right? Now that it's working, like we got to expand this distribution channel.
Well, that was right.
Yeah.
Yep. I had fun growing, you know, slowly and organically. And I felt like we'd figured it out. My husband and myself have three young kids of our own. We have 3.5-year-old boy, girl twins, first grade, 6-year-old boy. We were about to do it before COVID. COVID happened. Kitchens had to close for 3 to 6 months, but made it through and actually like boomed out of it. Competitors were down, and competitors for us is anything fun to do, right? There's not a lot of brands doing what we do, if any, at our way we do it. So that's why we hopped on it last year. And it's been really, really fun. We're doing our very best to grow ahead of it internally. So we have 9 HQ team members. You know, we have all the departments going, and that's been really fun for me to grow it sustainably in a way that we're ahead of where we want to be on our internal team. Because that's why we're doing this, right? I love the brand, love Taste Buds Kitchen, culinary entertainment, but really individuals are putting their life savings and their hopes and dreams in our vision and what we're doing. And so we really want to do it responsibly and support our owners really well.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands on a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710 or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
The 2,000 square feet, is that how you started?
A lot.
It's a large space, 2,000 square feet.
My first lease was 2,000, literally 2,000, because I carved out a space. In Manhattan, we're now 5,000 square feet because we took over. We were in a loft building in Chelsea. We were half the space. The neighboring tenant left. So we actually built a second kitchen. So we have two kitchens going simultaneously. You come up from the 10th floor, big elevator, and you know, go to either side. But yes, 2,000 is perfect. It's perfect for a kitchen. It's perfect to run a great summer camp business, to welcome 30 to 36 corporate executives in for a corporate event, a good date night, 24 clients in for a date night. So yeah, it's a perfect square footage for us.
Is it class A, class B?
So class A always welcome, but it doesn't have to be, right? We're just not trying to compete with Starbucks, right? We're not trying to compete to be that prime corner. Sometimes it happens, just falls into your lap and you get a good space at a good price. We are in a former Starbucks in Palo Alto, which is really funny, but it doesn't have to be. We're a destination, so we need parking, we need accessibility, we have a great paid ad strategy, a good grassroots marketing effort. We're working with schools, and we're working with the Girl Scouts, really just to get the brand name out there. A lot of times it will be an inline space, you know, you'll be next to a coffee shop or nail salon or whatever the case may be, but there's definitely some alternative spaces that can work.
I like, Justin, what she's doing compared to like young chefs or even, you know, the wine and sip and those types of concepts that, to me, it's just so limited in the scope of revenue. Like you're doing children, you're doing adults, you're doing corporate events, you're doing summer camps. I just think that by doing that, I just think you ensure your success. And I think you'll probably have superior revenues on average than some of these other brands. I think it was smart. I'm curious if you started that way. Did you start that way? It just started with children and it evolved.
Great question. So when it was a hobby, it was kids and baking. Once I did it full time, I knew it was going to be everything. Knew it had to be all ages, and I knew it had to be all kinds of food, not just sweet, but savory. It took longer for the adult business to build because we had that child client base and the adults took a little bit more time. But right from the beginning, I knew I wanted to do both because, like you said, there are five main revenue streams coming in. So they're, you know, they overlap. There's different seasons for each of them. There's different marketing strategies for each of them. I was really passionate. Our kitchen is beautiful, right? Adults walk in and they feel like, oh my gosh, I wish this were my home kitchen. Kids, it's colorful, it's clean. They just are itching to get started. So it's that nice balance between, you know, a nice home setting. We're not like a classroom. We're not a heavy commercial stainless steel facility. So the facility really works for all ages. And that's really unique to Taste Buds Kitchen.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at something that we pulled off of a site. And a lot of times when people add all these ancillary services, they're really insignificant. They're 3 to 5, you know, percent. Yes, they're significant. Like, you can't live without them. Adult classes, 16%. Adult private events, nearly 20%. Kids camps, you're like, oh, what is she really doing at kids camps? 23% of our revenue. 20% comes from kids' birthdays. And you look at kids' classes, another 8%. So these are significant, as you call them, pillars that have really shored up your business model. I like what you've done compared to the competition.
Yeah, we try. We kind of don't focus on anything else but the pillars. This is what makes our money. And we want it to come in fairly equally, and it helps to kind of diversify, but give you lots of different chances. And it, you know, what it's cool about it is it's still all those business lines are the same person, right? It's the busy mom who's able to book activities for her kid, or the busy dad able to book a holiday party for their team, able to do a bachelorette party. We've done 30th birthdays. We've done 50th birthdays. We've done 70th birthdays. You know, just that family looking for an activity. And then when you get more into the cities, you have the dinks and the sinks, dual income, no kids, single income, no kids, right? And they're just layering on. They're here. They can do something fun every night of the week, right? There's nothing at home that's keeping them there except maybe a pet or something. But yeah, it's a good business model, and we know who we're going after, and that kind of drives all that we do.
Jesse, tell us about the scheduling aspect and lifestyle of the business with seasonality, because it seems like most of these things would occur in the evening. I mean, whether it's a kids after school class or a corporate event. So what does the schedule look like?
Yeah. So nights and weekends are definitely our popular times. That being said, the school is off a third of the year, depending on the state, but generally about a third of the year. So a third of the year, we're open Monday to Friday, 9 to 4. That's camp, right? So you have that business a third of the year. And the rest of the time, mainly nights and weekends, but we're definitely seeing a trend in corporate events. They like daytimes now too. They like the lunch. They like the late afternoon instead of coming after work. We also have field trips, schools. So kids will hop on a school bus and come on in at 10 a.m. in the morning on a Wednesday. Nothing cuter than like 25, 6-year-olds walking in to make whole wheat pizza or something fun. But it's not like, say, a restaurant. I mean, I do consider us part of hospitality, but it's the event-based hospitality where they're reserving the day and time in advance. We know when we're coming. We shop for it. We staff for it to make sure we're ready for them. But our latest event, generally it's not going past 8:39, right? Depending on your market and how late an adult class will end. So it ends pretty early.
This is another brand. We're really hard, at least I am. I'm hard on public schools. This is another area where public schools used to actually teach these things. I did welding. I made products. I know you've done woodworking. I was in home economics. I baked. I learned how to crack an egg.
Home ec student.
I learned. You were a who?
I was an A+ home ec student. I walked around. I flirted with all the girls. I was spinning pasta. I loved that stuff. And it's they took it out of the schools. It's unbelievable.
They have taken everything out of the schools that will help you become a better version of yourself. So it's like, wait a minute. Are you going to be an independent male? Yeah. All right, we got to kill that. Like, we can't have this. We can't have you being a good spouse. We can't have you living on your own. I have family members that are going to college. They're panicking. They can't crack an egg. They can't cook. They can't do anything for themselves. I mean, it is unbelievable what has happened to this generation and the one prior. I mean, I'm blown away. So I love businesses that are backfilling, right, all the voids created by public schools. And this is one of them. Are you doing like aftercare where after school they could come in, or not necessarily an after school program?
We have it. Yeah, it's a smaller revenue stream, but we definitely have it. We used to do it in school, but that is a very tough, tough business. So we do have cooking classes at our facility. We have Let's Make Dinner, which is great for the older kids. So they come in and they're making dinner start to finish, say Tuesday from 4 to 6, which is really fun. And then for little kids, we have junior chefs. So that's the 4 to 8 year old. Definitely do that. But summer camp, and you know, girls love it, boys love it. It's like an edible science experiment, right? So in the kids' space, specifically for camps and let's make dinner, they're getting a lot of creativity. So we're learning how to make X dish, let's say pasta. And then they're getting to play around with the filling for their ravioli, right? Challenge it up and see which table can create the best version of a recipe. So really just being comfortable in the kitchen, having fun in the kitchen. Definitely we have recipes and we follow them, but it's really about having fun with it, right? Learning how to be proficient and just having a good time.
Interesting. This is all driven by parents, I would imagine. The adults are driving this and saying, hey, I want to put you in this class, right? How are you acquiring new customers? What's the marketing outreach to say we're acquiring customers?
Yeah, great question. So it's very word of mouth based. I mean, we certainly do a lot of efforts, both paid and grassroots. But once you come, you generally love it. So our reviews tend to be 4.8 to 5.0. We actually have multiple kitchens with 5.0 on Google and hundreds of reviews, which is nearly impossible to do.
Right? Agreed.
4.8 for us is exceptional, but that's our low point currently. So grassroots, once you come, you generally love it. So you're coming back multiple times. You're having your 8-year-old's birthday party. You're sending your 10-year-old to 3 weeks of summer camp. You're doing a date night with a spouse or with your college friend. You're doing a corporate event, right? So we're seeing people multiple times throughout the year in our different revenue streams. But we do a great business on Meta, Google, programmatic. We have all the paid ads going to help new locations get their sales curve steeper to get where they're wanting to go. But people really do enjoy it. You know, we know them by name. They know us. They're going to recognize you shopping in the grocery store as a franchise owner or your general manager. And we have good loyalty. People spread the word. So when they come back the second time, they bring their neighbor. Or if school's off for parent-teacher conference for your daughter, we have mom sending the link around and all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, the camp's filled.
That's a very low, low acquisition cost to bring on new customers, for sure. In the aftercare programs in the school, I happen to like those businesses, right? Because they, again, they're adding value to the kids. The kids get out of school at 2:30 and it's like, now what? Most parents can't get them. They're dual income families. Right. You know, the parents are at work till 5:30. So they put them in these programs. There's over 10 million kids in these aftercare programs. And of course, aftercare only exists in markets where people have discretionary spending. There's another 20 million kids that would participate had those programs. It's talking 30 million children. This is insane, right? So 10 are actively involved in these programs. I'm showing that cooking classes in the country is a $2 billion industry.
I mean, it depends how you find cooking class, right? Because we study that as well. Are you in school to become a chef? Because that's not us, right? Are you going to a formal culinary program to get a certain degree? Are you here to learn something new? And it's interesting when you pull our clients as we do about why are you coming to Taste Buds Kitchen? So learn to cook is pretty far down the list, right? Especially when parents are sending kids. It's to do something fun, to try something new, to make friends, right? Maybe your child's not as into sports or, you know, like just, this is fun. It's an uplifting experience. It's happy. There's not a lot of pressure. We're not, you know, cell phones are left in the basket if kids bring them. It's just this like fun environment where kids can be kids. Adults can be kids too. Could just have fun cooking. Of course, you're drinking wine or beer, but you're just, you know, kind of taking you back to your roots and that old school experience while you're in the kitchen. The entertainment industry is what I generally track stats on. Very big industry, getting into the food side of it, right? Like the Food Network has made a business of this.
That's right.
The entertainment of watching food, enjoying food, just for the fun of it. Like you said, lifelong skill, absolutely.
Who's buying it? Who's the franchisee? Who's attracted to the model?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And what I love about it is there's a lot of candidates, a lot of people that can be great Taste Buds Kitchen franchise owners. There's not a certain background that we're looking for in terms of skill set. I say it's more attributes, right? So you don't have gone to culinary school. We don't need or want you to be a formal chef, but we want someone who wants to be engaged first and foremost, someone that like wants to dive in there, feel passionate about this, really get involved. Someone with good business acumen, right? So we're looking for people that want to run a business, want to grow and scale a business. Looking for people that want to be a member of their community. You are going to be out and about. You are going to be talking to the local schools, talking to your chamber of commerce who want to get in the community. And then people who want to build a small employee team. Because it is a small and nimble team, but you have to want to be a good boss and develop your team members. The longer they're with you, the easier things get and the better jobs you're able to create. So those are really the main things that we look for. Engagement, business acumen, desire to be out in the community, desire to grow a team. And last but not least, desire to follow the system. You have to want to follow the system that we have, right?
Well said.
We have created this. We have worked on it. We have the path. We support you through it. We have business coaches. We have trainers. We're here to help you, but we're all doing things one way.
Well said. It is amazing how many people join franchise systems only to not follow the model and try and modify it as soon as they get there. It is actually mind-blowing. This issue, it needs a name. You know how everything has a name today? It's what there needs to be a name for someone that literally says, I want to buy your idea. And as soon as they buy it, they start modifying it. And then they start telling you, the founder, it doesn't do that here. My market's different from yours. I know it blows my mind. I'm going to name it. If I don't figure out a name for this, I'm going to...
You should trademark it. You'll make some money off of it.
I was on a podcast recently and the guy is like, what is the name of the issue? Like, for example, if I said to you, Jesse, have you seen the new, you know, Corvette? And you're like, no, I haven't. When we hang up, you'll see five of them. And it's a legit phenomenon, right? Yes. And I'm like, there's a name for it. I was on the call and it's like Meinhofer phenomenon. It's actually a real phenomenon where, I don't know if you ever heard Tony Robbins say, like, Jesse, look behind me, show everything red, right? Look at everything behind me red. And then he looks at you and he says, show me everything brown. And you're like, I don't know anything brown. You told me to look for things red. Exactly. Because you weren't looking for it. But now you're looking for the Corvette. Now you're looking for the cooking classes. Exactly. Right. We talked about your margin, but we didn't talk about how you actually price this service. There has to be a pricing model because you have so many different legs on this stool. How do you price it? Give me some idea.
Yeah. So we have pricing tiers. We have about four tiers. And so when we have a new franchise owner, we'll know their demographic. So household income and different attributes of their community. We'll have them do a competitive pricing analysis so that we see what local comps are. And really, comps for us is a very wide net of what people are doing for fun. And then we'll kind of pick a tier that most closely aligns. And then within tiers, there's slight variations, but it's a good model so that the relationship between what it costs for camp to a corporate event, to an adult class is very similar, and then prices in line with the market.
Can you give me an idea? Like, let's talk middle America. Don't give me Manhattan. Just give me an idea of some kids coming in. How many hours are they with you, and what would that child pay to be part of a class? And again, give me middle America somewhere, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So like our intro would be what we call a caregiver and me. It's the really little kids. They're coming in for an hour. So they're spending anywhere from $30 to $40. And the caregiver's free. So if you think of it, it's like $17.50 to $20. So they come with the caregiver. It's a bonding experience. So those are like really reasonable entry point. Come in for an hour, make spider donuts, right? Father's Day pizza party, Mother's Day tea party. Just like the fun parent-child activity. All the way on up to like a week of camp. For a week of camp, they're coming in 5 days a week. Younger kids come in the morning. Older kids come in the afternoon. That's going to be anywhere from like $300 to $400 a week.
A week.
$300 to $350 maybe in middle America.
That's great.
So I'm going to try to keep it reasonable. I would say we're average to above average because it's very hands-on as opposed to say a trampoline park or something else where there's five birthday parties going on at the same time. We have one birthday party and say that there's 12 kids coming. We're going to have two staff members, right? And so every six kids are going to be working with an instructor to make that recipe start to finish. You have the beautiful 2,000 square foot facility to yourself. So there's certainly going to be a premium over bulk, you know, where you have five or six birthday parties going on in large places. But generally, people find good value in what we do. It's a premium service, but we want to be affordable and something that people can keep coming back to do again and again.
When a child is in the summer camp, do you see them spending the summer with you or no? They're going to come in for a week or two and then they're getting baking fatigue and then they're moving on to another hitting academy or soccer. Right. What are you seeing? Yeah.
So it depends on the kids. We have had a child come to 8 weeks of summer camp 3 years in a row, right? Every week they're there.
Okay. His name is Bobby Flay.
Grown up with us, you know, from the time they were four and then they get older, they're counselor and trainings. They're here with us for the whole day. They're helping little kids in the morning, coming with their peers. I would say on average is probably 1 to 2 weeks and you're doing 1 to 2 weeks of soccer camp and you're doing 1 to 2 weeks of the parks and rec camp where you're hiking and swimming in the lake.
That makes total sense.
But you could have come and had your birthday party, right? And your parents came. We have a kids night out where you can drop the kids off and parents can go out to dinner. So we're seeing you more than 1 to 2 weeks a year.
Talk about the labor model now. So now we understand 2,000 square feet. We understand the market. We know the consumer. We know the household income. If I correctly heard you, it's 100,000 household. So we have that down. What is the labor model inside the store? So I'm doing a summer camp. You mentioned a ratio, but just expand on it a little bit. If a bunch of adults just came in there, as you say, to bring your own beer and to hang out in the kitchen, how are you staffing that business?
Generally 6 to 1, just an easy rule. So if there's 12 people, there'll be 2 of us. If there's 18 people, there'll be 3 of us. So it's really hands-on. You know, we clean, you don't have to. We're setting things up for you. Think of it like if you can host a dinner party, you can teach one of our classes, right? It's that warm and welcoming feel. People come in, they sit, they feel at ease, kids are having fun. And then we're just kind of keeping up with you and showing you how to do it and making sure that you're, you know, enjoying your experience. And everyone does the same thing. We're not like a place where like one table does one recipe, another does another. Everyone does it all. So everyone's cracking the eggs, measuring the flour, kneading the dough, and cutting the strawberries. We want everyone to have that same experience.
The franchisees have to have like a comprehensive understanding of cooking.
So a great question. So the model, like your team model. So think of it as the franchisee leading the team. You'll have a general manager who's also your lead instructor. They're the person that's going to be most likely full-time or heavy part-time teaching your classes, right? In the beginning, you're open Wednesday to Sunday to consolidate the event schedule. You're going to have a couple assistants. Assistants are the ones coming in to help as the events get bigger with dishes, set it up, engage with the kids. The instructors, yes, they have to love food. Do they have to be formally trained? No. And we have the recipes. We have videos to teach you. We have pictures of tray guides. We've got a lot of things that will guide you to success. You have to love the kitchen for the instructors, want to be there. But some of our best instructors today, you know, grew up on a farm and their grandma taught them. They just have stories to tell and a passion for food and a comfort with food. And food is part art, part science, right? So we're looking to teach the way we like to crack an egg, the way we knead dough. Are there many ways to do those things? Absolutely, right? It's just a fun experience where, you know, my favorite demo we do is how to chop an onion, how to hold a knife, how to dice an onion. And the way we teach, I hope no one else ever cuts an onion any other way because it's so fun. It's so easy. People are amazed. And that those are the tips and tricks that I hope that they'll take home. But yes, the instructors must love food. Otherwise, you're not going to want to do this job, right? Because you're with people all the time. You have to like people, like having fun. But we will, pretty common to come in knowing how to make some of the things we teach, but not all of the things.
Can you explain on a podcast your egg cracking technique? Or is it more visual?
Yes, it's good. No, I can.
You
so
can.
The egg cracking technique, and this is your, you know, now you've top secret come to a Taste Buds Kitchen class, we crack it on the counter. So you tap it against the counter and then crack it. And the difference is when you tap it on the side of the bowl, which people are used to, you break the shell inwards and it's more likely to get shells in your eggs.
Unbelievable.
Tap on the shelf, pop, dump. And then if you do get shell in the bowl, you use the shell to scoop up the shell because the shell, like, it's like a magnet, the opposite.
Just
right?
Moves around.
Moves around. You can't get it. But if you use the shell and the shell magnetize to each other and you can scoop it right out.
I was watching my cousin Anthony recently over the holidays cracking eggs and watching him and he was cracking like a dozen eggs.
Right, like
so
that.
It wasn't like once or twice. He just kept doing it and they were perfect. They were perfect every time. And I said, I've never seen anyone crack an egg like that. And he was doing it. I have always cracked an egg where it's on the sharp edge of like a rim. And you get egg shards, right? And they end up little shell shards everywhere. So we understand the labor model. Explain your org chart a little bit, because relative to the number of units you have operating, you're really well staffed. For the listeners, most brands that come on a show or are selling their franchise concept and they have 20 units, they might have 2 or 3 employees, might. And of those 2, 3, the founders are in that number. So go ahead and explain that, because it's impressive.
Yeah, that was important to me, like how we did this. And that was really before we were doing our push, that was more like us. We were very small and a tight group. We still are, but I knew I wanted to form the department, right? So most of our departments are one person, but they're still a department, right? So we have a director of ops and training that's in charge of all of the operations and then our training department. And we've just promoted the woman that ran our New York City kitchen for 9 years. She's our franchise business coach. So she's the one going out to the kitchens, coaching them to success.
Excellent.
We have a director of culinary entertainment. She's the one coming up with all of the recipes and the content and how the classes work. It's part delicious recipes, but it's also part that they finish on time and the ingredients are readily available. We have a hire also from our New York City kitchen I tend to poach. She does all of our business systems and our finance analysts. She is making sure we have a great tech stack of all the vendors that we use, from staffing to booking to QuickBooks. She's setting them up. She's integrating them for all of our franchisees. She's doing our bookkeeping, making sure all our KPIs are in order, that we're ready for item 19 for the next FDD. We're just bringing on a part-time CFO to help franchisee profitability is so important. So we're reviewing that every month to make sure their P&Ls are where they want them to be. We're working on budgeting with them and what do you expect for sales and labor and food? How are you going to get there? Helping to coach them through that. We have myself, my husband, he's our SVP of development. So he's an architect and did real estate, commercial real estate in New York City. He's been with us full-time for 11 years. So he's helping all the locations through site selection. We work with CBRE, a national brokerage firm. We have a partner architect. So he's making sure they get built, that they're beautiful, and that it happens in 8 to 12 months. That's kind of our timeline from when you sign the franchise agreement to when we want you to open in that calendar year. We have an onboarding specialist who's making sure we have about 300 item onboarding checklists, right? That all the things the franchisee needs to do and we need to do to help them get open happen. Myself, and then we partnered with Guy Balzerano, who is the founder of Lightbridge Academy. It's early childhood education. So he sold that business, retired. And then our franchise lawyer is the same person. So when we were ready to grow, he said, I want to introduce you to Guy because I think he's bored. I think he thought he wanted to retire. Retirement wasn't as exciting as he thought. And I think you guys would hit it off. So we met him about 2 years ago now. And he's been a great mentor, partner, and is very involved in our day-to-day, just helping us scale, like make sure we are ahead of where we need to be team member-wise. And we have the roadmap. I meet with him twice a week, sometimes more. We know like our next hire. We know when we want to do it. We want to open 200 locations in the next 5 years. Okay. And we want to do it with 75 franchisees. We know our goals. We want to give franchisees the ability to grow TBK empires, right? Their own. We just had our first franchisee open his third, right? So that's kind of exciting for us. There's a lot of growth within. We have a current franchisee opening her second. We have another franchisee with two. So people are who are doing it like it and want more. That's the kind of best validation for me. And then a lot of our new franchisees, the last two recent ones, are each doing two from the beginning, which is exciting too. Two out in the San Francisco Bay Area, two in New Jersey.
That's great.
So it's a long answer, but we try to have all the places and pieces lined up. So at least we have departments that are forming and starting and a really great hardworking team in marketing. We have a VP of marketing who's handling all the marketing, really not FranDev marketing, because we do work with FranDevCo and we have Brandon Johnson as our development director, but her whole job is to increase sales and profitability for our franchisee, to making sure that marketing plan we talked about for the revenue streams is lined up and in place.
Great segue. And it wasn't long-winded at all. It was actually what I'm looking for. Deep, granular detail into what are you doing? How are you staffing? How are you adding value to the franchisee or the listener saying, because right when you think about these types of businesses, you're going, what could her revenue possibly be in these, I'll quote, cute entertainment cooking classes? Very impressive. Go ahead. What's your item 19?
Yeah, so item 19, so we were $742,000 was the gross sales AUV in 2023. We'll, of course, come out with 2024 in a couple of months. And average profitability was 31%. Which is $227,000.
Unbelievable.
So really good.
That is super impressive. If you looked at the median, the high range is 1.22 million. On the low side is 345,000. You're talking about a median revenue for this brand of 714,000. I mean, that's just really impressive for a brand. There are food concepts, QSRs, that don't have this kind of revenue. Not even close, actually. Some of these acai bowl businesses and all these businesses that you think everyone wants to go to and, you know, cold press juicing and all this fun virtue signaling, eat clean type brands, they're doing $300,000-$400,000 at best. You're doing twice to three, four times that number. I would assume this 1.2 million is Manhattan.
No, so Manhattan is not in this. If you go up to the top, these are franchise locations. Manhattan is higher than all of those.
Where is this 1.2 million location? What city, state?
A San Francisco suburb.
Unreal.
And they worked, and it's so funny. I think back, so our franchisee who just renewed, next 10 years. I remember when she was about to sign her franchise agreement, she called me and she said, you know, all the franchisees have my cell phone. We're very small. I know them. I know their kids' names. Then she said, do you think, I know you can't tell me, but do you think I could ever hit 400,000 in sales? This was back, you know, 2014. And in my head, I remember thinking like, I don't know, right? I know what I've done here in New York. I don't know. And this was before we even had an item 19, right? Because we didn't have any franchisees, any real data to show. And she had to go on a lot of faith and run her own projections. And, you know, you can have no certainty of success. But I remember thinking like, I think she can, but I can't tell her I think she can. Of course, I didn't. And, you know, she had 800,000, you know, a couple of years ago. And we always talk about, I didn't know what was possible when I started this 17 and a half years ago. I did not know it would be my life's work. I did not know we would franchise the brand and we would have owners all across the country telling me, you know, you've changed my life. People who were traveling before and not able to be home with their kids, people who were doing okay in their career, but not as passionate about it, hadn't really found their thing. And they're just, you know, doing well and happy, loving life. And that really feels good. So that feels good to me, being a numbers person, the emotional side of me, that it's a good brand, it's a good concept. And, you know, it's not for everyone. You have to like what we do and have to want to work hard, like in any business, but it's a really fun business. It's a great community of franchisees. They care, they help each other, they help us. We have franchisee committees, we have annual summits when everyone comes into Maryland and we do a crab feast together, which was really fun. We got crab mallets with the Taste Buds Kitchen logo burnt on. So
I like that. What's interesting about what you just said, several years ago, you had a franchisee ask you, do you think I could do 400 grand in top line gross revenue? You actually have a top performing net operating income location doing 392,000, which is incredible. So for the audience, average gross revenue for Taste Buds Kitchen, 741,000, net operating income, 228,000, top performer gross revenue, 1.222 million. Top performer net operating income, 392,000, with an average net operating income as a percentage, 31%. Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. You're impressive. High energy. Love your background. And I like that you said, well, you know, like all these people that get involved in finance, all these people taking subways and trains at 4:30 in the morning, grinding it out in corporate America for a job that you will be replaced in literally 1 to 2 weeks. Nobody gives a shit about the employee anymore. They really don't. There's no loyalty. There's no pension. There's no, you know, gold watch that's gone. Like all this stuff is just over. Focus on like you, your family, your investment objectives. Focus on how you're going to retire uncompromised. These are the brands that could get you. You have no AI risk. You have no Amazon risk, right? This is really a cool concept. I'm happy to have you on the show. Thank you for taking the time away from building your business and your family to spend an hour with us. I really appreciate it, Jesse.
Excellent. It was my pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Love what you hear on the Pursuit of Profit podcast? Show your support by subscribing, rating, and leaving a review. Thank you for being a part of our journey.